2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com, follow us on Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Let's take you down a path, and we're going to walk backwards in time on this path to a melee that happened on a hot summer day last August. It was a Sunday on a usually very quiet street in a suburb of Salt Lake County. Cottonwood Heights, it's right by the mouth of Big Cottonwood Canyon, if you're not particularly familiar with Salt Lake County. So it begins with a march to remember a man killed by a police officer. And then it ends in chaos and crime. Fast forward to last night. In front of the Cottonwood Heights City Council, the mayor, the public, the Utah Attorney General's office issued what it reviewed and found in this case. And I want to be very clear. They said that the officer's actions, that they did not use excessive force. However, I also want to be very clear that there are three other circumstances, findings in this report that I want to talk about. Important revelations from new evidence about what did go wrong and why it went wrong, Dave.
Now, this happened about 10 months ago, so a significant amount of time has passed. And remember, there's been hundreds and hundreds of protests in the Salt Lake County area from last year that were totally fine, that didn't end up in arrests and punches and chaos. But this is one that did.
Yeah, and you may say, hey, Deb, why don't you find the things that went right in this? Well, when something ends like this, I found it very difficult to find anything in that report that went right. So we're going to focus on the three things that I think went wrong. And then in the next segment, we're going to talk about and hear the audio from police cars and police body cam about how this all started. And I think it's a very ridiculous way that this all started. That's in 10 minutes. So for now, what went wrong? Well, the first thing that I felt went wrong was that at first glance last August, Dave, it seemed like there were dozens of the 150 or so protesters who were smashing it up with police on the streets. It felt like everybody was involved in the melee. Well, after the Attorney General's office looked at hundreds of hours of police video cameras and iPhone video, it boiled down to about 20 people. So 20 people ruined it for the rest of everyone, you know, ruined it for everybody else. So those 20 got sideways with police and devolved what was a peaceful march to honor this man who'd been shot by police. And it devolved into a catastrophe. In fact, at the end of the day, only 9 were charged. No, 9 people. But the Attorney General, they went over piece by piece the evidence, Dave, and they said, hey, several more could have been charged. But at the end of the day, more could have been charged. So I want you to listen to what ended up happening to several officers on the scene that day because of what started with these 20 people who would not comply when the rest of the protesters and marchers were complying. Listen.
We saw in video or photos certain event members who punched officers, shoved officers, grabbed and pulled at officers. An incident where one person who officers were grappling with on the ground pulled or twisted an officer's helmet to the point that the pressure of the chin strap caused the officer to nearly lose consciousness. And the theft of an officer's body-worn camera that had been knocked loose during a physical struggle with an arrestee.
Shortly after this, Debbie, we had the chief on.
Yeah.
And we talked to him about this very protest and how it had devolved. And he said that they were prepared, that the protesters were prepared, that they had super soakers, that these super soakers were filled with all sorts of things that are gross. And also said there was pepper spray that was put in these super soakers, and he claimed to have a uniform. I'm interested. I didn't hear any of that.
Mm.
I didn't watch the full hour and a half
of the presentation
here.
From the Attorney General's office.
Maybe
yeah.
they touched on it, but that was the claim from the chief.
So let's dive into the second thing I felt went wrong after listening to this Attorney General's office review of the Cottonwood Heights Police Department and their actions on August 2nd. Now, we're talking about this protest. It started out as a peaceful march, and it just evolved into fisticuffs on the streets of Cottonwood Heights. The second thing that went wrong, in my view, is there was an elected official, a councilwoman, who took it upon herself to live stream the protest and get on the side of protesters. And from the evidence that was presented by the Attorney General, she continued to confront police on private driveways that she did not have permission to be on. In other words, she became an instigator. And then she came on our show and not only claimed on social media, but on our show as well, that an officer had flat out punched her in the throat. Listen to her confrontations with police.
Why do I have to get back? Because you're taking someone over a water bottle?
Then she continues to confront police even after being told to leave the area.
Back away, please. Back away.
This is a crime scene.
This is a crime scene. This is a crime scene.
Your crime.
Okay, so the AG report is issued and says that her claims of being throat punched are not accurate, that there's no evidence that, yes, things got ugly. The video looks bad when you watch it, but much of what was claimed never happened.
Allegations of officers beating a restrained prisoner are untrue, and the evidence of such is seen in reviewing the accuser's own phone video. Allegations that an officer throat punched a protester were found to be patently false.
And there was no shortage of video. It was being live streamed. Everybody had their phones out. I can see why it took 10 months to come to these conclusions, because there were so many videos. So if something happened, it's probably fairly likely that somebody caught something.
It bothered me that we had an elected official who said one thing, but the video evidence, according to the Attorney General's office, told a much different story. So let's talk about the third thing that I felt went wrong. The police department leadership failing to plan, and left a handful of officers who happened to be or were on duty that day to deal with a very large crowd. So now this is all from the review from the AG's office. The police department, the leadership, and City Hall knew protesters were gathering ahead of time. They knew that this was going to happen. How did they know that? Well, somebody in the Parks Department even reserved a pavilion at the local park for the protesters to gather. And they reserved it. They blocked out time ahead of time. So instead of bringing in more officers, maybe contacting the leadership and the protest group ahead of time and working through things, it ended up being more of what I'm going to call a case sirrah, sirrah approach. Whatever will be, will be.
The response to this event was reported to us to be more or less minimal, a minimal response, in hopes that there wouldn't be any issues. No real event plan was drawn up. Little pre-event planning happened here. As we saw with this event, it only took a few event goers behaving badly to nearly overwhelm the handful of Cottonwood Heights officers who had been held over shift or assigned as part of a shift to respond to this event. The officers there did a good job, but there weren't enough of them to deal with the issues. It seems to come back to a planning problem in this case.
Well, was it a planning problem, or were they trying to not inflame the situation? if you remember and look back to the previous year, these protests were police protests. And the protesters were saying, your presence is inflaming the situation. It's inciting anger. So we don't want you here. That was a consistent message. So we can't be terribly surprised that the police weren't anxious to insert themselves into this group.
Let me remind you, though, what ended up happening is what we heard from the Attorney General's office review. A lot of officers got hurt that day. A lot of officers ended up, being beat up, and they were overwhelmed by the crowd. So I think police department has to look at after the fact and say, could we have done a better job by contacting maybe the protesters ahead of time, whoever's leading the group, and having a conversation with them, and then making sure that our officers who are on duty are well-equipped to respond and keep the peace. What stood out to me the most, however, Dave, above all of that, is how this whole thing started over one simple thing. We're going to play the audio recording of what started it all straight ahead.
Dave and DeGenovic.
We're talking about the Attorney General's report that was issued last night to Cottonwood Heights City Hall and to the public about the melee in Cottonwood Heights this past summer. And as I watched the entire timeline laid out by the Attorney General's office of what happened and what went so south so quickly, it really came down to one thing, Dave, in my mind, that started it all. And it was this: get on the sidewalk. So in a moment, we're going to hear the audio about how the sidewalk became the hot button issue. It's a police audio that we haven't heard before. So I'm going to talk about the sidewalk and why all I can think about right now is the sidewalk.
Yeah. And I can tell you why the sidewalk matters, at least in my own mind. Now, a year has passed since all of the protests were happening, so we've forgotten a lot of what was going on at the time. So let's just step back just a minute and remind you of what this timeline was like. This is where my mind goes. Back in May, you have the Black Lives Matter protests that turned bad in downtown. They flip over a cop car, they torch it, and then about a month later, in June, you have another protest in Provo that actually does block these streets,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
And I think it was a van or an SUV that was trying to get through these protests, and they're pounding on the SUV and they're hitting it. The SUV starts pulling and driving away. Somebody pulls a gun and fires two shots into the SUV because they couldn't get through this crowd. And when they were talked to, they said they feared for their life. They were scared. So they were trying to get through. So clogging up roads is dangerous.
And what you're saying, Dave, is the temperature of the room at this time last summer is hot.
So, great. Great description.
Protesters are angry at police, and police are trying to respond to very violent acts that bubble up from peaceful protests.
Yes, and all of these started as peaceful protests, right? The Provo shooting was a peaceful protest until it was not. The torch cop car was a peaceful protest until it was not. So you can't look through it, look at it through the eyes of, oh, it was just a peaceful protest. Well, they all were peaceful protests.
Just a peaceful protest until it was not. And I want to step now over to the Cottonwood Heights protest. It was on a Sunday afternoon, a hot August day on a normally quiet street. I've lived in Cottonwood Heights since 1995. I'm very familiar with the quiet streets of, you know, Cottonwood Heights on a Sunday afternoon. This particular protest, in my view, went south from the very beginning. Not halfway through it. Not three quarters of the way through it. And it all has to do with this sidewalk. So for the first time, you're going to hear the audio that started it all. There's a lieutenant who pulls up to the marchers. Now, remember, they are marching from a park down the street to remember a man who'd been killed by police. years earlier. And this lieutenant pulls up and tells these protesters, many, most of them, in fact, this review finds from the AG's office, are compliant and they're staying on the sidewalk. But there are some you can see from body cam video who aren't on the sidewalk. They're in the street. So here's the audio that we never heard before from that lieutenant. He's inside his police car. And here's what you hear, what we hear him telling the crowd.
Ladies and gentlemen, please get out of the street. You're welcome to protest, but just not in the middle of the street. Do not block traffic. Please move to the sidewalk.
Okay. That sounds fairly reasonable, right? Just explaining and asking people to move off the streets. Because, again, you can't clog the streets with your protest.
So then it escalates from there. And, again, they're focused on the sidewalk. A handful of police officers start ordering, because that's all that are there, right, at this point. A handful of police officers. They don't have enough officers there, it turns out, to deal with this crowd of people. And the 20 or so folks who are protesting, who start to incite the crowd, according to this Attorney General's office report. So again, now you've got police officers on the streets, no longer in their car, walking alongside protesters. And they're actually, I can see their hands in the video, nudging them to get on the sidewalk.
Hey, we don't need to do that. We don't need to do that.
They get on the side. Get off on the side right now.
So you hear the protesters calling police names. And suddenly we've gone from this kind of low-key, hey, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please get out of the street. You're welcome to protest, but just not in the middle of the street.
To this, where police are now kind of really close to protesters. And protesters are calling cops' names and defying orders to get on the sidewalk. And again, it's all about the sidewalk.
If I'm a neighbor,
yeah.
If I'm in this neighborhood, what's my experience right now? You start seeing things escalating. You start seeing the group gather. You start seeing it get agitated. If my kids are in the front yard, I'm bringing them inside the house. Maybe I want to get out of there. Maybe I don't like the temperature of the room. Maybe I am afraid.
But you can't leave.
But if I can't leave.
Because their car's blocked.
Well, and people are gathered in a private driveway, right? I mean, this is what was happening, is this group was filtering out. And it was not organized. So if I want to get out, I can't.
So my next question then becomes, what about the sidewalk? We all have to stay on the sidewalk? I mean, I run in the street. Turns out it's a lot like Noah's Ark. It's 2x2, according to city ordinance. We have to walk 2x2 on a sidewalk. And that was the hill everybody was willing to die on. The protesters who didn't want to get on the sidewalk, defying police orders, and police insisting that under city ordinance, you have to walk 2x2 on a sidewalk, even if you're protesting. Dave, is this the hill we're going to die on?
Maybe. Maybe it is. Because otherwise, if you're going to have an ordinance, you're not going to enforce it. You're not going to have any kind of order. You know, I don't know. It's difficult. You want to allow people to protest. But again, there are laws to protest. There's permits to have. You got to abide by the rules. And when you don't, you can't be surprised when the cops push back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.